Welcome to Healthy Voyager Radio. I'll be your host, the Healthy Voyager, Carolyn Scott. Hello, and welcome to Healthy Voyager Radio here on AM 1680 KDSV, AdrenalineRadio.com, and AdviceRadio.com. I am Carolyn Scott, also known as the Healthy Voyager from HealthyVoyager.com. We are now in October, and it is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is going to play a big role in today's show. Today's show is sponsored by Golden Earth. Golden Earth offers a line of essential oil body care products that include fragrant blends, aromatherapy, bath gels and lotions, and unscented lotions as well. What makes their products unique is the 100% pure organic and wildcrafted essential oil blends that have been designed with the intention of wellness in mind. You can find out more about and purchase Golden Earth products on their website at www.goldenearth.net. Also, Golden Earth is offering a 15% off discount on any of your online purchases at Golden Earth by following using the following coupon code, which is GENX2009. That's GENX2009. So for Healthy Voyager Radio listeners, you get a 15% discount if you buy Golden Earth products online. Make sure you don't forget that to add that code in before you submit your order for your goodies. And by the way, they just won three health and fitness gear awards. So they rock. Congratulations to Golden Earth. Alrighty. So these days, it may seem that everywhere you turn, there is some kind of slogan or some event that's promoting awareness for some disease or cause. But despite all of its awareness, people all over the world are still falling ill or contracting diseases that could have been prevented had they had the information and the access to proper and responsible medical care. And women's health is the one that gets quite a bit of attention here in the States, mostly. However, the numbers of women with cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and other diseases are far from eradicated. So as much as we may be bombarded with pink or emails to stop or to help sponsor our friends walking for a cause, we are still quite a ways away from ending all of this sickness once and for all. And I'm steadfast in my belief of preventative medicine as well as healing the source of the disease rather than just masking the symptoms. I'm also a huge believer in taking an active role in your own health rather than passively following an advice and just crossing your fingers and hope that it works. It's imperative that we become conscious as well as educated consumers, so to speak, when it comes to our health. And with women, we have the added bonus of prenatal care and healthy pregnancies, and all the way through post-delivery and menopause. We've got all that extra stuff to worry about in our mechanics. We've got a lot going on top of career and family and so on. So it may seem like quite a bit to handle and can become overwhelming and stressful. The slogan, Healthy Women, Healthy World, embodies the fact that the crux of family health, that we are, as women, the crux of family health, and women play a crucial role in maintaining the health and well-being of their communities, so we must take care of ourselves first and foremost. The health of families and communities are tied to the health of women. The illness or death of a woman has a serious and far-reaching consequence for the health of her children and her family and the community around her. So even though it may seem like we hear about the causes and research, etc., all of the time, it's just not enough when it comes to educating folks on preventative care. But we are definitely breaking some ground these days, and it's global, because even though we've got walks and events and research and phone calls and telethons and that sort of thing, there are many places in the world that don't have that. And if we teach preventative care here first, we can spread that message and that knowledge a lot more cheaply across the planet, and then we can get the costly medical treatments and pharmaceuticals and that sort of thing kind of pushed to the wayside, and really getting global health when we have the right knowledge in place and teaching. There's a great group of doctors who have come together to do just that, and they are called PCRM, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're doing fabulous work, real physicians who've gone to medical school and done the whole thing, but are turning the traditional practice of medicine on its ear, so to speak, and they're integrating some wonderful tools and information in their practices. I urge you to visit their site at www.pcrm.org, PCRM.org. I know it can be tough for folks to to be told to not listen to their doctor's advice or something like that. But as we've all been conditioned to trust them. But these guys are really great. They're well-researched, well-educated, real physicians, not hokey-pokey shamans that some people may be afraid of, and or, you know, Eastern medicine that most people can be afraid of, herbalists and that sort of thing, which I think a good integration of all of Eastern and Western medicine is kind of what we need. And these guys are doing just that. So I think they're outside of the box thinking, and their traditional medical smarts are just really, really great. And I'm hoping more people start to turn to physicians like that. Well, my guest today is just such a responsible doctor. She's an OBGYN physician, a national represented professional artist and author, as well as founder of Owning Pink, a website and a series of workshops committed to empowering women to reclaim their health, their girlitude, and their mojo. She practices integrative gynecology at the Clear Center of Health in Mill Valley, California. Her nationally recognized abstract and caustic paintings and sculptures are represented by galleries in San Francisco, Santa Fe, Boston, Atlanta, Laguna Beach, Houston, and Bethesda. I now have on the line with me Miss Lisa Rankin. Are you there, Miss Lisa?
It's Lisa, but yes, I'm
here. Oh, hi, Lisa.
I'm so delighted to be here.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So what influenced you to become an OBGYN? Was that something you had always thought of going to medical school, or did something prompt you to say, hey, I really want to help women?
You know, I honestly don't remember ever making the decision. My father was a doctor, and I grew up in hospitals. I scrubbed in on my first hysterectomy when I was 12.
Wow.
And my dad was a radiologist, which I thought was really boring, sitting in dark rooms looking at x-rays all day long. But one of his friends was an OBGYN, and so I spent a lot of time, learning more about women's health via that avenue. And by the time I was 14, I was volunteering in hospitals. By the time I was 17, I had a job in a hospital.
Wow.
And I honestly don't remember ever asking myself whether I could do anything other than that, which is why the other avenues that my life has taken have been kind of a surprise to me.
So when did the art bug get you?
You know, it's funny because I was always the one going to medical school, and my brother was always the artist. He got a full scholarship to art school, and I never even considered it until I was in medical school. And when I was in college, I was pre-med at Duke, but I was a creative writing major. So I kind of had that left-right brain balance thing going in college. And then when I got to medical school and it was, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. all day, every day science, I realized that if I didn't do something, I was going to quit.
Mm-hmm.
I was just, it wasn't a good balance for me, and I recognized that I needed to do something to feed my right brain while I was in medical school. So everybody thought I was crazy, but I signed up for art classes at night. So here I was in medical school all day and taking watercolor classes in the evening. And my professional, I didn't start really doing it professionally until 2001.
Wow, that's
but it's always
excellent.
Been a passion of mine. It's always, I shouldn't say always. Since I was 22, it's been a passion of mine. So 18 years of art.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, it sounds like you're right. You're in school all day, and it can be so overwhelming, just everything that goes into your brain in med school, and then such a release to do that in the evenings.
Well, art very much became my meditation. It was kind of this quiet time where I could create, and yet there was no expectation attached to it. It was just kind of my way to process my day and to, there's a whole lot of stressors that go into medical education. It was a very traumatic time for me. Mm-hmm. And so it was really kind of how I put my truth out into the world in a private way in the beginning, yet it became a way to transmit those feelings and emotions to others as well. And I think a lot of us have that kind of desire. Like we look for ways to express ourselves creatively, and so many of us, kind of the inner critic inside, said, no, I could never do that. And a lot of the doctors that I worked with would often comment on that, like, wow, I wish I could paint. I wish I had a creative side. And I argue that we all do. We just have to get in touch with it.
Right. Make time and do that. So you mainly are a painter and a sculptor?
Yes. Mostly a painter, but recently the project that I'm working on is an art called the Woman Inside Project that is going to be going on tour starting in January, and that's an all-sculpture project where I've been casting women with breast cancer with plaster, the same kind of plaster you would use to cast a fracture.
Mm-hmm.
I had never done sculpture before, and when I conceived of this idea, I was considering sculpture mediums, materials, And I had no idea what material to use, but that was the one material I knew how to use, was medical plaster. So I create these sculptures of these women from their neck to their pubis with plaster. And then I hold these casts up to these women and say, you know, this is what the world's tell me about the rest of you. And I then would interview them for as long as it takes, you know, several hours, while trying to kind of get at the woman inside. And I then transcribe these stories into narratives, first-person narratives, the beauty that I see within each woman. And it's been a really incredible project for me. The sculptures are then painted with encaustic, which is my medium. It's painting with pigmented beeswax.
Mm-hmm.
And so these sculptures will be juxtaposed with the stories, such that, you know, the casts all look very different. You know, women of different ages and different weights, and some have had mastectomies and some have been reconstructed and some haven't. But my message is that we are more than what we are on the outside, and that we are all beautiful within if you take the time to listen.
Wow. How long has that project been in the works? When did you start to do that?
It's been 5 years in the gestation process.
Wow.
It started, in the beginning, they were all patients of mine. And it was kind of awkward. You know, it's not considered regular to invite a patient of yours home to your house and ask her to be undressed in your chair and be a model for an art project. But I felt really passionately about the project. It was inspired originally because a patient of mine was pregnant when I had to tell her that she had breast cancer.
Oh, wow.
And I knew that there were these belly casting kits out there that people use to kind of cast their pregnant bellies.
Uh-huh.
And it occurred to me, wow, what if I were to cast this woman who had this pregnant belly and these pregnant breasts, and I was going to have a mastectomy as soon as her pregnancy was over. And so that was sort of the inspiration for kind of putting the idea together. And then I decided that they didn't need to be pregnant for it to be as beautiful and special. So there's one pregnant woman in my show, and the rest are not pregnant. But that is a situation that I found myself in often, where you have to break this news to people.
Right.
That, you know, it's a traumatic diagnosis for women, beyond, I think, other types of cancer. I mean, to tell women that they have ovarian cancer, which is usually more fatal. Telling a woman she has breast cancer is often much more emotional. There's so much, you know, our society is so tied up in the importance, the value of the breast.
Right.
That we, I mean, if you were an alien coming to our country to look around and see what we consider important, certainly you would think that the breast is among the top things that we care about just by watching television ads and billboards and looking at buses going down the street.
Just like that Dove commercial. Have you seen that with the little girl watching TV and she's bombarded with the images of beauty?
Oh, you know, I actually don't have a television. It's one of the ways I'm able to do all the things that I do.
That it does take up much of your time, absolutely.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get to do all the neat stuff you're doing.
Yeah, I don't miss it. I got rid of my television about 5 years ago, and I really don't miss it.
Well, you're doing some wonderful work.
Thank you.
Excited to, we're going to take a little break, but when we come back, I definitely want to hear more about your art, as well as your practice as an OBGYN and all that great stuff.
Great.
So we'll be right back with Lissa Rankin.
This is Wendy Malick from Just Shoot Me, here to tell you about Pets 911, a free public service changing the way we care for pets in every community nationwide. Across the country, there are thousands of healthy, adoptable pets waiting for a loving home every day. By calling 1-888-PETS-911 or visiting 1-888-PETS-911.org, you will find the location of your closest adoption facility, as well as tons of other information you need to know as a responsible pet owner. So when thinking adoption, think Pets 911.
How many homeowners does it take to change to Energy Star qualified light bulbs? Answer, all of them. And they have every reason to. The bulbs look really cool. They come in spiral, mini-spiral, and A-line shapes. They last and last, up to 10 times longer than traditional fixtures. And they use 2/3 less energy. That's win-win-win. Cool lighting, cool temperatures, cooler energy bills. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Does your baby weigh over 500 pounds? According to the Environmental Protection Agency, a person must weigh over 500 pounds to safely process the amount of mercury still present in certain vaccines, including flu shots. And yet, these shots are recommended for pregnant women and infants.
The federal government knowingly allows mercury to be injected into children and pregnant women, but encourages it?
Yes, and that's despite numerous scientists from our best universities who have shown mercury in vaccines kills brain and immune cells and is linked to the autism epidemic. One in every six children now suffers from a learning disability.
They're trying to tell us something, but we don't seem to get it.
In 1999, the federal government and physician groups vowed to remove mercury from children's vaccines, but they have refused to honor promises made.
Mercury-free vaccines are available, but I know you have to ask for them. Demand only mercury-free vaccines, especially if you're pregnant or have a small child.
This ad brought to you by MomsAgainstMercury.org. KnowMercury.org. Friends and parents of children injured by mercury. Mercury and vaccines.
Welcome back to Healthy Voyager Radio here on AM 1680, KDSV, AdrenalineRadio.com, and AdviceRadio.com. We are back on with the pink lady herself, Lissa Rankin. Are you on with us?
I am.
Great. I'm so excited to keep chatting with you. You're such a wealth of information.
Oh, thank you.
So you decided to start integrating art with your practice not too long ago, and that's been a wonderful kind of release for you, as well as another way to show your, I guess, to spread the message of health, especially for women. I know you said you started about 18 years ago just kind of as a release while you were in school. When did you start to say, you know what, I think I can start to integrate my practice with this? Was that with this particular project, with the Woman Inside project, or did you start that before?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's a difficult question to answer, because if you ask the people who view my art and who are collectors of my art, they will tell you that my art has been inspired by my work from the beginning. If you look at my paintings, I regularly use these kind of egg-like shapes that are recurring themes in my work, and my paintings are what I consider abstract portraits of moments in time. And so many of those moments in time are, you know, a frantic moment in the delivery room, or a baby that died, or some experience that I'm processing by transmitting it into painting. But it wasn't a conscious effort so much in the beginning. But I had this experience on my wedding day where, just kind of on a lark, I had no idea what a shamanic journey even was, but I took this shamanic journey at Post Ranch Inn in Big Sur, where I got married. And during this, which I'll spare you the details of, at the end, we kind of walk into this room in the center of the earth. And after this hour-long journey, there was this gift that we were supposed to, you know, visualize and accept. And this gift that came to me was a stethoscope that had a paintbrush painted on the diaphragm.
Hmm.
And when I saw this, I was so confused. I was really pissed off. I was like, oh, my goodness, what does this mean? Is it, am I supposed to paint my patients? Am I supposed to teach my patients to paint? Am I supposed to inspire creativity in my patients? It was at a time where I felt like my life was really fragmented and I was wearing all of these different hats.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of felt like, you know, I'd wear my doctor hat, and when I had my doctor hat on, I was supposed to put my white coat on and stand up on a pedestal and talk down to people, and that didn't really feel like me. And then when I was an artist, I was expected to be kind of deep and dark and brooding and poor. And that didn't really feel like me. And there were, you know, I kind of had my writer hat and my mommy hat, all these various facets of myself that didn't really feel integrated. And what I ultimately learned from that gift in my shamanic journey was that really to become whole and to be the authentic beings that we all have the power to be, you really have to bring it all together, that you have to bring all the facets of yourself into one being, and that you don't have to choose who to be, that you are who you are.
Right.
And so as part of that process, again, without being really conscious about it, I recognized at one point, oh, my goodness, I'm painting my patients, when I was doing the Woman Inside project, And then I started teaching workshops where many of the people who were taking them were patients of mine. I was teaching my patients to paint. And I started doing workshops, women's workshops that are about owning the various facets of ourself, owning spirituality, owning creativity, owning sexuality, owning fertility, all these different things that make us women. And once again, I realized I was kind of bringing all of that together, the medicine, the women's health, the creative part, and all of the other pieces of myself into the work that I was doing. So it was, once again, it wasn't really a conscious effort. When I looked back on it and thought back onto that shamanic journey, I had to laugh.
And if I'm not mistaken, you are a raw vegan?
Oh, no.
I
kind of call myself a raw vegan omnivore. My husband makes green juice every day, and we both drink about 5 green juices that we make from cucumber, kale, celery, ginger, lemon, and a little bit of jalapeno, and sprouts. So we drink a lot of green juice, and I have a dehydrator. We eat probably 60 to 70% raw and a large part vegan. But when we go out to restaurants, we order whatever we want, which is why I throw in the omnivore part.
That's cute.
I think, and we really do it for health reasons. I know a lot of people who are vegan do it for sort of moral reasons. And, I was diagnosed in my 20s with high blood pressure, and my husband had some issues with mood disorders. And both of us just discovered that by adopting this diet, I was able to nearly get off all medication, as was he. And so it had such profound effects on our personal physical life that I've become a real fan and, kind of proselytizing it to my patients and the world via my website. But I also think that, everything in moderation, including moderation. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people, a lot within the world of the raw vegan world, I think sometimes it can become so dogmatic
right. That
people are turned off by it. And what I've found is that by educating people about the benefits to the planet, to your body, of eating in this way, that you can really open people up to the possibility of it without it having to be an all or nothing thing.
I agree.
So, what I tell people is the more raw you can be, the more vegan you can be, the healthier it is for all of us. It's it's part of a spiritual practice, but it doesn't have to be a dogma.
I agree.
At least that's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I became a vegan for health myself, and I'm very much of the mind that you get more bees with honey, with just
yes.
spreading the message, leading by example, then people are less likely to become defensive or anything like that. And then they're more likely to try it and say, hey, you know what, this does taste good, and this is kind of making me feel better. So yeah, I completely agree with your message.
Absolutely. And I think, I think it's not until people really try it, as you said, that they realize you can eat really beautifully
mm-hmm.
and still eat that way. We make raw pizza and raw lasagna, and whenever people come over for dinner, I'm always tempted to prepare one of these kinds of things because people are always blown away by how good it tastes. And it's fun. It's a really creative way to, I think, get in touch with the earth. I love going to farmers markets and kind of sorting through what's, what's in season and creating ways to really showcase all the colors and vibrancy of the natural earth.
That's wonderful. And you integrate some of your health practices with your patients. You kind of tell them, oh, you should maybe try this or try juicing. I do.
My husband packs a cooler of green juice for me when I go to the office to see patients.
Mm-hmm.
And almost everybody ends up getting a shot. Just because I want people to take it looks like pond scum.
It does.
And so people are often really resistant. And when they taste it, often they're like, wow, I didn't realize that it could taste so good. And so many of my patients have issues. I mean, I really believe that nutrition is the foundation of all of our health. And, you can take all the supplements in the world. You can, take drugs. But if you're not really getting at the root of it, if you're not building your foundation, then you're really just putting a Band-Aid on the wound. And so I spend a lot of time doing nutrition counseling in my practice. Unfortunately, more with my patients because I'm in an integrative medicine center and it's a different structure than a typical managed care based practice.
Mm-hmm.
I had that luxury in my old practice in San Diego. I was expected to see 40 patients a day.
Yeah.
And it was impossible to be able to do that kind of education. So it's a luxury for me and for my patients that I have the time to really do that, because I think it makes a difference.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's definitely, it goes hand in hand, nutrition and health and all that. And hopefully more and more physicians sprout up like you. We need more of you in this world.
Thank you. So, you know, I think people are waking up to it. It's just that our healthcare system is so badly broken that it's a real struggle. I don't know what we're going to do, because it's only, you know, it's getting more and more difficult to practice that way within the healthcare structure that we have. For me, it took quitting my job. I took the huge leap of faith of realizing that I'd rather not practice medicine than practice the way that I was having to practice. So for 2 years, I thought I was just going to be a full-time creative type. I quit my job, and I wrote a book, and I was painting full-time. And it was funny. It was right around the nine-month mark, and all my friends made fun of me. But it was around that nine-month mark that I realized that you can quit your job, but you don't quit your calling.
Mm-hmm.
And that I needed to be of service in the world, but I just wasn't willing to be of service in that way. It was too, it didn't fit with my own integrity to have 7.5 minutes with a patient.
Right.
And so I think any of you out there that are listening that are saying, wait, but, you know, my doctor's not talking to me about all these things, affected by the system right now.
Right.
That it took me a while to figure out a way to get out of the system to practice it my way. But I also recognize that a lot of people, you know, they don't have access to the kind of care that I provide, because it's often not covered by insurance, and, you know, times are tough and people are struggling. So I think, you know, certainly anything like what you're doing here, Carolyn, to educate people outside of the system to really reclaim their own health and become partners in their own wellness is a really wonderful service.
Thank you. Yeah, I completely agree. I don't know if you heard it in my introduction when I was chatting about PCRM.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was here cheering, saying, amen, sister.
Yeah, they're just so great. And I know Dr. Neil Barnard is one of their foremost physicians that have, you know, has been, I've seen him on Access Hollywood and Extra. And I'm like, yes, we're finally getting, you know, some good information out there from actual doctors, you know, because I know a lot of people are a little reticent to, you know, resistant to hearing from someone who might just be an herbalist or something like that,
right.
You know, so
right.
I think it's great to combine the two and say, you know what, we can do this.
Right. Well, that's been one of the things that's been really beautiful for me, is that in learning so much about integrative health and learning from other alternative practitioners, the way I think of it is we all have tools in our toolbox, and the more tools we use, the more we can really help people. So my website, owningpink.com, has what I consider kind of a virtual integrative medicine center. We've attracted all of these amazing practitioners, various types of, you know, wellness, everything from acupuncturists to massage therapists to intuitives and Reiki providers, you know, all sorts of different modalities. And what I've realized is that really when you bring all of that together and you teach people all of these tools, we can all be more well.
That's wonderful. And we're going to take a little break, but I'd love to bring you back so you can chat with us about Owning Pink and some health tips for us ladies as well as the men around.
That sounds great.
Perfect. We'll bring you right back.
You drink it? Cook with it? It's there every time you turn on the faucet. But what do you really know about your tap water? Do you know where it comes from or what's in it? You should, and now you can. Your water supplier will soon be sending you a short new report about your water. Look for it in the mail, and when it comes, read it. Don't let this chance to learn about your drinking water go down the drain. Learn more by calling your water supplier or 1-877-EPA-WATER.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell, the nerd from Digital Computer Talk. One of the things that I do is I broadcast on AdviceRadio.com. AdviceRadio.com is a place where you're going to find people who are giving you advice on whatever it is that you might need advice on. Of course, my show, computers. I'm giving you advice on computers, and it's for free. And what about Nick Fedoroff on gardening? America's master natural gardener? Oh, man, this guy is funny, and he's got a beard that, you know, you could plant all kinds of things in there with that beard. It is totally cool. A couple of other shows you want to check out. Healthy Trends. Healthy Trends is all about being healthy. And then Better Times After 50. I'm not 50 yet. I'm looking forward when I get to go on down to Denny's for that wonderful discount. Again, this is Benjamin Rockwell with Digital Computer Talk.
When people say you're bright, they mean you've got a lot going on up there. It's not something people who use drugs hear much, because over time, drugs can change their brain. And the more times they try drugs, the more they want them. It's called addiction, and it's a disease that will waste your brain. For information, visit StopDrugAddiction.org or call 1-800-729-6686.
Welcome back to Healthy Voyager Radio here on AM 1680, KDSV, AdrenalineRadio.com, and AdviceRadio.com. We are on with Lissa Rankin, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about her wonderful website called Owning Pink. Take it away, Lissa.
Thank you. Well, you know, we were talking earlier about integration and really bringing all of the facets of yourself together, and Owning Pink was a direct result of my attempt to do that in my own life. It didn't come easily. It sort of evolved through a process for me where I was really brainstorming, trying to figure out what could I possibly do that would let me be an artist, a writer, a mother, a raw vegan omnivore, and a physician, and how might I be of service in the world without being tied to an office. And so Owning Pink really was conceived from that inspiration. And I call it Owning Pink, A Gutsy Guide to Getting Your Mojo Back. The title was something that has been evolving for years and began many years ago when a girlfriend of mine was about 7 months pregnant. It was my birthday party. And her husband started going off about how he was going to have a little girl, but she was never going to wear pink. She was going to wear red or green or blue or purple, but she was going to grow up and be a feminist and maybe be president, and she'd never wear pink. So there I was, standing head to toe decked out in pink. I mean, pink fur sandals, pink dress, pink hat. And I put my hands on my hips and said, you know, boyfriend, you tell your daughter she just has to learn how to own pink. So it ended up inspiring this whole series that is completely unlike my other art. It was this totally chic, girly, over-the-top series filled with what I call girlitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of painted this series over the course of about a year, and people went nuts over it. It was not something that I even sent to galleries. I just kind of hung it in my office in my patient's bottle. Hung them in their little girls' rooms and that sort of thing. Some of my galleries that represented me found out about this, and they ran with the idea. Owning Pink invited female artists in the gallery to interpret the term Owning Pink. Started having these shows where women make these art, and all these people show up in costume, you know, men in pink bras and people in pink boas and pink striped stockings, and it was really crazy. But that wasn't really what I intended for Owning Pink to be. And it took a period of years, which is, you know, gathering place for people who have lost.
Lissa?
Yeah.
I think we're losing you a little bit.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay.
Okay, great. So keep going.
So many of our readers are in transition. They're in the middle of a divorce, or they've lost a loved one, or they're infertile, or they nest. You know, some challenging transition.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come to Owning Pink kind of to tell their stories, and we've built a community, an online community, where people are really, you know, these women and some men, about 10% of our readers are men, they come together to tell their stories and really to be a support network for each other. And then we've also attracted, as I said, a whole host of healers. And these healers, there's a lot of crossover, of course. The healers are sometimes losing their mojo, and those who lose their mojo become healers. And so it's a really beautiful dance that is going on online. And so I really invite anybody who kind of finds themselves in that situation, whether, you know, whether you're in transition and could use some support, or whether you're a healer looking to be of service. It's really a bridge for trying to bring those two communities together.
That's wonderful. And you offer workshops on the website as well as events in your local area?
We have, until now, they've all been in-person workshops, but we're about to launch, to start launching online and teleconference workshops. So stay tuned for that. Our first one is at the end of October, so we're trying to get all the technology in place to be able to bring our online community, you know, forward in another direction.
That's great. That's great.
Because I'm really excited about it.
Because you're based in Northern California, correct?
Yes. I'm in the Bay Area in Marin County.
Perfect. So then now everyone can benefit from all your great information.
Yes, yes. Again, everybody already is benefiting, you know, but it's in writing. And
right.
There's a distance. I'm a writer, so for me, writing is such an easy way to express myself. But some people are really orators, and they really, you know, they want to talk. So we're trying to set it up so that we can really connect on a different level. And I'm planning a retreat, the first Owning Pink retreat for the spring, where we're going to, you know, hopefully be able to get all of these pinkies together to meet in person. I'm really excited about that because we already all feel like we have this deep emotional connection, and I can't wait for everybody to meet.
That's wonderful. Do you have a sneak preview of where that retreat may be?
You know, it's not, the details aren't definite, but I'm hoping to do it at Asilomar, which is in Pebble Beach on the Monterey Peninsula.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That sounds nice. Spring would be perfect.
I know. And that'll be our one-year anniversary. We just launched April 27th, and that's right around my birthday. So I thought it would be a great birthday present for me and a happy anniversary for Owning Pink.
That's great. And it's doing super well. I know that we met on Twitter.
Yes.
And I've seen just the amount of people that follow you and just adore what you have to say. So,
you know, it's been unbelievable. I have more than 20,000 Twitter followers, and it has nothing to do with me. I think it's just the fact that we're putting out into the world what people are really hungry for,
right?
Which is the invitation to be authentic, to really tap into the core of who you are, and to give yourself permission to be all you all the time. I think so many of us wear masks, and we walk around pretending to be somebody that we're not. And we've come to, you know, put ourselves in these boxes that are not authentic. And what we have done is we've really given people an opportunity to get out of their box and take off their mask and say, look, this is me. And we've invited them to come to this community where they're guaranteed to feel loved and safe and nurtured. And I think there's just not enough of that in the world. There's too many people walking around not being who they are and not feeling loved.
I agree.
Yeah. So I really think it's just a testament to the fact that we've tapped into something that's a universal need.
Yeah, it's doing super well. Tell us how you are able to juggle helping women, having your practice, having your family, staying healthy, doing your art. I know you don't watch TV, so that helps. What are some tips? Because I know so many women these days are, you know, juggling their careers and their families, and they're trying to have some semblance of independence as well, and social life, and not losing themselves in it. How do you do it, and what would you say to most women to keep everything above water?
It is a constant challenge, Carolyn. It really is. I have to say, it is every day I am conscious of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of it, is every day I'm conscious of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in part, I have help. I have a wonderful husband who is a stay-home dad, and he makes my green juice and runs my life and, you know, supports my art. He builds all the panels that I paint with. He deals with kind of the gallery relationships and really helps with a lot of the work that I do for Owning Pink. And so, and I also have a team of employees and volunteers who support Owning Pink. So I'm not trying to do it all on my own. I'm seeking backup where I can. And I think so often, you know, those of us who are trying to find balance in our life don't ask for help when we need it. So that would be the first tip I would say, is seek support. Ask for help. Nobody can be a superwoman all the time. You know, I think that you can do anything you choose to do, but you can't ever be perfect. Nobody can meet the expectations that we set for ourselves at every moment of every day. And so one of the things that I do every morning when I wake up, I specifically set the intention for what I'm going to let go that day. And I try not to let it be the same thing every day.
Mm.
So, you know, today I'm doing this radio interview during the time where I would normally take my one-hour hike. So today my hike is going to have to go because I have to finish my book that's due December 1st. And so, you know, some days it's that I'm not going to prepare a healthy meal. I'm going to eat something out of the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Some days it's that, you know, I'm not going to be available to my Owning Pink community and that I'm just going to have to trust that the community will support itself for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Some days it's that I'm not present for my daughter and that I have to trust that it's enough that she has my husband. But every day there's something, more than one thing, that's going to have to give.
Right.
And I try to just rotate it. I try to say, okay, if I didn't take the hike today and I ate something out of the freezer, then tomorrow I'm going to prepare lovely raw vegan meals and I'm going to take a hike. And if, you know, if I neglect my daughter for a day, then the next day I'm going to really make time to give her quality time and be present for her. But I can't do it all every day. And I think so often when we set that expectation for ourselves, you know, we reach the end of the day and we feel like failures, and then we're kicking mm-hmm. ourselves and feeling guilty. So I think giving yourself permission and then just accepting it. And then it's, at the end of the day, if you have extra time and you can do those things that you wanted to do, great. Then it's icing.
Yeah, that's wonderful, wonderful advice, because I know so many women, especially young new mothers, they want so much to be the perfect mom, the perfect wife, the perfect everything, and they beat themselves up about it because they can't be, and it's not
right.
their fault.
And that's how you lose your mojo. You know, mm-hmm. you're constantly kicking yourself and expecting yourself to live up to some ideal standard that doesn't exist in the real world. If anybody is being the way those moms think they need to be, then that's all they're doing. I mean, if all you're doing is, you know, full-time being a mom and you have a nanny and you have a housekeeper, then sure, maybe you can meet those expectations. But very few people have that luxury. And so, you know, those standards, those ideals of, you know, the women that can make the perfect pumpkin cupcakes every time that there's something to be done at school. You know, I never make the perfect pumpkin cupcakes. I go to Whole Foods and buy them.
Like they did in the 1950s, perfectly coiffed.
Exactly. Like something's got to give. Something's got to give.
Yeah. And it's okay.
And it's okay. And who you are is enough, just the way you are.
Yeah, I agree. It's great. And I know that you've written a couple books and now you have a new one coming out. Can you tell us about your books?
Well, all of my books are in progress. They're all coming out, like, all around the same time. The one that I am working on right now is called What's Up Down There? Questions You'd Only Ask Your Gynecologist If She Was Your Best Friend. And that, and that'll be published in the fall of 2010 by St. Martin's Press. My other book is a book about encaustic painting, for which I interviewed 70 artists who work with the medium. I did studio visits all over the world. You know, collecting the information about how they work with the medium. So it's really a textbook about how to work with encaustic. And that's coming out in the summer of 2010 from Random House. So I've been busy with books. I'm also working on a memoir, which is kind of part doctor memoir, part spiritual journey, part girlfriend's guide. So, and that one is still in progress.
Wonderful.
So writing, you know, if I had to choose of all of my identities, which one most resonates with me, I'm a writer first and foremost.
That's excellent. So which one is the one that's available now and which one is the one that's coming out in 2010?
They're all coming out in 2010.
Oh, all of them.
Yeah. The first one has been 5 years in the making, but because it's a very complex book with thousands of photographs, it's taken this long.
Well, I'm excited. I'll be first in line for all of them.
Oh, thank you. It's exciting. I have a book tour for the second book, which is going to be a first for me, so I'm really excited.
That is exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So
I'm looking forward to having an opportunity to really get my message out there.
Yeah, and it's a great one that most women and all kinds of people need to know.
Yeah, well, the book that I'll be doing the book tour about is really about empowering women and educating them about their bodies, because what I've discovered in soliciting questions, when I received thousands of questions from women, mostly in my community, from Owning Pink, but what I realized is that most of the questions are variants of, am I normal?
Hmm.
And I really, you know, I really want to help people understand that most of the time, yeah, you're normal. And yet we've been conditioned to think that our labia is supposed to look a certain way, or our breasts are supposed to look a certain way, or we're supposed to smell a certain way. And yet, you know, these are societal conditionings, and we're enough just the way we are.
Yeah. That's great. So, Lissa, what do you feel are the best things a woman can do to stay in proper balance, both health-wise as well as physical and mental? I know we were talking about the juggling of, you know, kind of letting go and that sort of thing, but as far as what you would tell a patient if they are feeling a little out of sorts.
Wow. Well, I have a whole questionnaire I give my patients. It's kind of a mojo questionnaire. And I could talk for an hour on that topic alone. But in short, I think it's really, as you said, it's a balance. It's a balance of all of those facets of who we are. And what I find is that people tend to really focus on one or two facets of what makes us who we are. Maybe you're super creative, and, you know, the creative juices are flowing in the art studio making art all of the time. But, you know, you've let your health go. You never exercise, and your nutrition is horrible. Mm. That's not a good balance. Or somebody might be a health nut, and they're exercising, you know, an hour a day, and they're eating a raw vegan diet. But they've completely neglected, and their relationship is falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think it's about kind of thinking of all of those facets of the spiritual side, the creative side, the health piece, the relationship pieces, finding love in your life. And, you know, I could go on. But really integrating all those pieces of yourself and asking yourself, what's missing from my life? Mm-hmm. And most people, if you ask them that question, it's a routine question I ask when I see patients, and almost everybody starts to cry. I started to feel bad, and I would come home and tell my husband, there's something wrong with what I'm doing. All of my patients are crying. And he said, no, it's just that you're inviting them to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's right, is when you really think about it, what's missing from your life, there's an inner knowing and a wisdom that we all have, and most of us can really tell that and recognize what's missing. And so I guess in a general picture, it's tap into what's missing and work on that and focus on that and make that a priority and set the intention and change, because it's possible. But from, you know, a more concrete, I think everybody needs exercise, no matter that it's important to your health, it's important to your mental, there's so many benefits to it, I think it's important. Nutrition, obviously, is really key.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all need to make time for ourselves. So, you know, it's difficult when we're trying to have that balancing act, what's going to give today. But whether it's a meditation practice or taking a yoga class or going to the spa, getting a massage, or whatever it is, or going to the studio and painting, whatever it is that you need to really find time to be with yourself, I think that's really critical, too. And so often we neglect that. We don't recognize how important that is.
I agree. Now that we're in October, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we are bombarded with pink. What do you feel are the best preventative measures women can take?
For breast cancer prevention?
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, nutrition is key. Green juice is a big one. Any dietary changes that can alkalinize the body are great for cancer prevention in general.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer loves an acidic environment. And an acidic environment tends to be produced in the body as the results of animal products. So, you know, meats and dairy and alcohol, caffeine, all of these things are really acidic.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you can do to alkalinize the body through, you know, vegetables, green juice, things like that, the more it's sort of a natural cancer prevention tool, because cancer cells don't like an alkaline environment. They thrive in acidity.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol also is something to limit if you're looking to reduce the risk of breast cancer. Be no more than one glass of alcohol per day, and some would say none,
mm-hmm.
Just because there seems to be a correlation between alcohol use and breast cancer, probably related to the fact that because the liver is necessary to metabolize alcohol, the liver is busy metabolizing alcohol instead of metabolizing estrogen,
mm-hmm.
which if the estrogen levels in the body rise, then you're at higher risk of breast cancer. So if you do drink alcohol, it's important to take a folic acid supplement, which seems to really make a difference. So if you're a regular, you know, if you're regularly drinking your wine with dinner, add a folic acid supplement. You know, limit red meat and avoid things like fried foods. Eat organic to reduce your exposure to environmental estrogens, because we found a lot of evidence, a growing body of evidence to suggest that that the chemicals in our environment, the hormones that are fed to cows, and some of the environmental estrogens that are present in things like pesticides, can simulate estrogen in the body and potentially increase the risk of breast cancer. And there's a growing body of evidence to support that. It's really fascinating. Even at the epigenetic level, meaning that those same chemicals, when pregnant women are exposed to them, may cause genetic changes in fetuses.
Wow.
That will then predispose them to breast cancer later in life and other reproductive types of abnormalities such as fibroids. And so it's really amazing how taking care of our environment is so critical to taking care of our health. Other things that you can do, sort of natural things, drinking green tea seems to potentially be preventative.
Mm-hmm.
Antioxidants are things that you can do to help fight cancer. Exercise seems to reduce the risk of breast cancer. Some people say things like ginger, turmeric, pomegranates, things like this are natural things. Flax seeds that can help as lifestyle modifications. And there are also supplements that I won't get into that can help prevent breast cancer, and that's the kind of thing that I go into detail with when my patients come in and have, for example, if they have a family history of breast cancer. And then I practice in Marin County, which has the highest per capita rate of breast cancer in the country, I believe.
Wow.
So it's a big issue here. They're still really trying to figure out why is that? What is it about this county that puts us at such high risk? But it's a big issue around here.
Wow, that is bizarre. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, good thing they have you there then.
It's lovely to know that I'm doing some good in the world. And the other thing, of course, that I didn't mention is screening. Breast cancer screening, of course, is possibly the most important. Mammograms after the age of 40. We offer breast thermography at our center, which is another type of breast cancer screening that women can use in addition to mammography, which looks at heat generated in the breasts. There's some data to suggest that areas that are kind of hot spots in the breast are areas where blood flow is increasing, potentially because there's cancer cells that might be trying to thrive in that area. Mm-hmm. And when increased vascularity appears in the breasts, there are things that we can do to kind of shift that, to change the hormonal picture, to reverse that. So it's potentially a way to detect changes that might be risk factors for breast cancer before the cancer has come about. So that's another kind of growing possibility.
Those are all excellent, excellent tips.
Oh, thank you.
Wonderful. Unfortunately, we are about to run out of time, and I had so many more questions to ask. And I could have you on for 5 hours. But what I'd love for you to mention is where we can find out more about you, how can we get in contact with you, and any other things on the horizon that you will have beside, you know, the books and your webinars and all that sort of thing, so that our listeners can get in on what you've got to say.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I have 4 websites, but I won't bore you with all of them. There's links to all of them on lissarankin.com, which is lissarankin.com. And owningpink.com has a contact link that reaches me directly. So that's really the best way to reach me. And, you know, if you're in Marin, I'm at Clear Center of Health, which is clearcenterofhealth.com. So, I certainly would be happy to connect with any of your listeners.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time today and missing your hike to chat with me. I appreciate it.
It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, and I hope to continue to be in contact, and maybe I'll have to move up to Marin when I'm pregnant. Thank you so much.
Caroline.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was Miss Lissa Rankin. She was a phenomenal physician and has so much to say about overall health. Be you a man or a woman. So don't be afraid just because she's got owningpink.com. She's got a lot of information for the men out there as well. So make sure you visit LissaRankin.com as well as owningpink.com. You can follow her on Facebook as well as on Twitter. And like I mentioned, that's how I met her, and she's got some great stuff to say. Again, you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook. You can check out healthyvoyager.com. You can check out YouTube and all that good stuff. Find out all the things I need to say. And yeah, so again, I'd like to thank Lissa Rankin. I'd like to quickly mention that on October 9th, there is a Compassionate Cuisine event for annual Animal Acres happening. And you can find out more at CompassionateCuisine.net and buy tickets online as well as on AnimalAcres.org. All the proceeds go to Animal Acres and all that good stuff. Great food in Long Beach and a good cause. And before we head out, I am going to play us a song by gluten-free gal Adrienne Pearce. The single is called Better Things to Do from her Fault Line album. You can find out more about Adrienne on her website at adriennepearce.com as well as on MySpace and Facebook. Make sure you check in with us next week at 2 p.m. Thursday, where I'll be chatting with Last Comic Standing's comedian Lang Parker and Adopt a Pet's Abby Binstock Moore about pet adoptions and all the wonderful things that pets can do for us. Have a wonderful weekend. I will talk to you again next week. Have a healthy week, and here's Better Things to Do by Adrienne Pearce.
Spend my days with the lost boys. Spend my nights with the black sheep. And some say we are the company we keep. Spend my money like I have some. Spend my money like my time.
Healthcare Now with Laura Wheelis.
A new blood test called the plaque test may help individuals determine their risk for heart disease by measuring an enzyme in the blood called LPPLA2. Dr. Christy Ballantyne, director of the Center for Cardiovascular Disease Prevention at Methodist DeBakey Heart Center, says the test could be invaluable for patients.
Measurement of LPPA2 with a plaque test may be an important strategy to identify high-risk individuals before they have a heart attack, when we can do something to reduce the risk.
Learning the results of the plaque test will allow individuals with heart disease like Doug Rothart to lower their risk before it's too late.
It's an enormous wake-up call. I mean, it tells you then and there that you have a considerable risk of developing heart disease, and then you can change your lifestyle.
For more information about the plaque test, please consult your doctor. Additional information may be found at www.plactest.com. This is Laura Wheelis reporting.